Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:35 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 17th, and I thought that today I would start off with this long-term chart of UK, or it's actually London, house prices. And we can see that there have been some significant headlines about the fact that prices have been coming off for much of the last 6 months, but I think it is also worth putting that in the context of just how much they went up since about 2013. So we have had a pretty spectacular advance, and it is perhaps even more impressive than the advance that we had from about 2000 through to 2007. So what we can also see is that, generally speaking, house prices tend to rise in a pretty consistent manner, and when they stop going up, then they become susceptible to a pullback. And we can also see that when they pull back, they do not fall back to the levels that were seen in previous cycles. That, generally speaking, that pullbacks have generally been quite severe from when one considers the peak price, but that they are not as severe as we would see, for example, in a stock market sector that was had become sharply overvalued and then collapses. And that is because, obviously, people have to live somewhere. Now, when that being the case, though, the reality is that prices have stopped going up for much of the last 18 months, and the likelihood is that we are going to get some consolidation. When we look at the pound, then this is a rather interesting period of time, because Theresa May was in many respects rebuffed in Brussels yesterday. And now there is the big question about what exactly is it that the Brexit negotiations are going to result in, if anything at all. The pound is currently, and in fact for most of this year, has held this progression of higher reaction lows, although it has been susceptible to some volatility, but it is holding that progression, and it is coming back towards this 130 area. That represents the region of the trend mean, and provided it can hold that area, we can give the benefit of the doubt to potential for additional higher to lateral ranging. But of course, that is contingent on a benign result from the market's perspective as with regard to what these Brexit negotiations are going to result in. And if we simply take what has happened over the last year and how that has affected the currency markets, I think it is not an exaggeration to conclude that when optimism about a transitional agreement improves, the pound tends to rally, and when it deteriorates, the pound tends to come back. But there is the additional point that the UK is likely to be the first European country to raise interest rates. And that will at least help to add some support to the pound over the medium term, as the prospect for the UK to be raising rates faster than the EU, I think, becomes a more realistic prospect. The euro was a little bit weaker today, but did not hold the decline. It continues to consolidate below this 120 area, and it really would need to break downwards to a new low and take out the lower side of this almost 3 month range around 116.5 to really suggest that we're going to get more than a consolidation and an unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. And sticking with currencies for the moment, we have seen a pretty significant resurgence in interesting commodities, and not least with copper doing better and the industrial metals generally doing better, and oil prices firming and holding on around this $55 through $60 region. So the Australian dollar is now right in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of that underlying range. It was mildly in negative territory today, but pulled back, or at least regained a lot of that decline, and it continues to hold the recent low. As long as it is holding that low that we saw at the beginning of last week, the end of the week before, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. And that is going to be important from the perspective of the ASX 200, because it has been up on consecutive days and now it is breaking up and away from this trading range. Australia's markets are generally not this inert, and this is an emphatic breakout from a pretty persistent and very inert range. And that range, and I've mentioned it in successive audios, that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. That whenever this range was resolved, whether on the upside or the downside, it would result in a dynamic move. It looks increasingly likely that this index is going to push right up to 6,000 before it even thinks about pausing. And there is the potential that it break upwards, considering that we do have I think a recovery situation in the commodity complex. Then commodity-related markets have been breaking higher, and Australia has been something of a laggard. But of course, the ASX 200 has been so dominated by the financials index that the materials are less of a weighting in that index. When we look at the continuous commodity index, it is back above the trend mean. It has held a progression of higher reaction lows for the last 6 months, but it does need to continue to do that, and more importantly, needs to hold that 400 area if potential for additional upside is to be given the benefit of the doubt. And if we look at copper, it was a little bit softer in here today, but it has continued to hold this breakout. There is increasing speculation around the copper price and indeed in nickel that these are integral commodities with regard to electrical, or excuse me, electric vehicles. And that is one of the more bullish factors behind them. It represents a new demand story, and a powerful demand story, considering that the market for electric vehicles is doubling about every 2 years. It was about 1% of the global market in 2016. It's about 1.5% this year. It could be 2% next year. And if that trajectory continues, then what we're talking about is millions of units being produced within the next 2 or 3 years. And that is a new source of demand for these commodities. It's obviously having an influence on the perception of value in the copper market, but I think it is also important in nickel. And not least because nickel prices have been the wallflower in the industrial metal complex. They are really only just beginning to get out of the blocks in here. And I want to revisit the Japanese market as well, because the yen is around 112. There is on that weekly chart, there is quite clearly still a progression of lower rally highs since the beginning of this year. So the dollar has been weak, and the yen hasn't been the strongest currency in the world by any means, but it has been weaker than the dollar, or excuse me, it has been stronger than the dollar for most of this year. But when we look at this on a daily perspective, then the last few times it got up to 115, it pulled back in a dynamic manner. And now the dollar has, rather than pulling back in a dynamic manner, it has been more steady. It has been coming back in a much slower fashion. And that suggests that there is the potential now for the dollar to steady up from here and potentially take out that 115 area. Now the Nikkei was up again in here today, and it is now up to above the 21,000 level. And I apologize for all these notifications that are coming along. I seem to be getting a lot of spam recently. But when we look at the Nikkei, this is a clear break upwards to new high ground. And this is not simply just a simple breakout from a short-term range, because when we look at this on the long term, then we get to put it in some context that it has been 25 years since we have had a move up to these levels. And that is important because Japan has been written off for such an incredibly long time. And now we're starting to see some Not only that the government is buying and the central bank is buying, but that foreign investors are beginning to look around for value. That we are already over 8 years into a bull market on Wall Street, that Europe is, I think, is in a recovery mode and still has plenty of potential upside, but that there is a legitimate reason that fundamental-oriented investors are beginning to look at Japan. It's not as expensive as everywhere else, and it is breaking higher. This is, I think, really quite important. The second section, which is so very often a leader in this market, continues to push higher and is closing in on that 7,000 area. Now, I think what is important is that it paused at 5,000, it paused at 6,000, and it is quite overextended relative to the trend mean, and it is testing the 7,000 area. So it is not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some form of consolidation. But then I think we should also keep an eye on the topics. The topics index is now pushing through to, and it is closing out the day at 1723. That is a new recovery high, but when we look at that on that very long-term chart, we can see that 1750 has been an area of resistance since 1992. And that's a rather long time. And what it also suggests that, and I think this was something that I've pointed out previously, but I think it is worth highlighting again, and it is that every time the market has got up to test this level since 1992, it has pulled back and made a new low. And it did that in 1996. It did it again in 99. It did it again in 2002. It rallied all the way up to 17 50 in 2007 and came right back down and made a new low. Then it got up to that level again in 2015 and did not make a new low. That is different. There has been obviously a clear change to sentiment, a clear change has happened in this market. And the potential here is that the topics, which is the broad index, could break on the upside. And that would suggest that Japan has finally, after decades, completed a long base formation. And that is also, considering that it is such a large market within the region, it's positive for its neighbors. So we're also seeing that Taiwan has continued to extend this advance above 10,000, that the Philippines has continued to extend its advance and is extending this breakout above 8,000, that the Thai market is also extending its breakout. And then, of course, because everyone has been so very focused on what's going to happen with North Korea, they don't seem to be paying a great deal of attention to the fact that South Korea has broken up out of what has been a really quite lengthy range and continues to extend that advance. And of course, this is all representative of the fact that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, that central banks have still got an awful lot of money sitting out there on their balance sheets, and they are continuing to add more of it. We are at a point where the Federal Reserve is beginning to talk about reducing the size of its balance sheet, and it's going to start off very small this year, in fact, this month, but then it will ramp up next year. And part of the reason, of course, for that is because we have, or not we, but they have got so many bonds that are coming to maturity next year. They don't want to have to unwind or to take all of that supply off the market in one go. So they're going to refinance some of it and they're going to let more of it roll off. It represents quantitative tightening. The very big question is, what are other central banks going to do? That liquidity is both global and mobile. So when one central bank is printing and printing aggressively, that money flows around the world to the most attractive assets. And as long as that remains the case, even in an environment where the Federal Reserve is slowly tightening, if other central banks are more than making up for that that withdrawal of liquidity, then these liquidity-fueled bull markets can persist. But then it all, of course, does, it puts the onus for that liquidity provision onto an increasingly smaller number of central banks. So we really do then need to keep a close eye on what the ECB is doing, for example, since they have added in over 2 trillion in liquidity over the last few years, and they are beginning to talk about whether whether perhaps 3 trillion, considering that they have added in 2.3, that maybe there's only another 700 billion that they're willing to put in. But 700 billion is a significant amount of money nonetheless, and that would also offset the quantity of money that the Federal Reserve is taking out next year. So that's important because when we look at things like the VIX index, which has, I think, become an object of fascination for traders because the short VIX trade has been so incredibly one-sided this year. Well, what is it that is driving this? Well, it's quantitative strategies and it's passive investing and the continued rise of ETF investing. And what is it that could possibly upset this trend? Well, it's potentially higher interest rates or it's central bank tightening. So it's either going to be liquidity or the price of that liquidity is likely to eventually upset this trend. But as long as we remain in an environment where we are not seeing interest rates rising aggressively and liquidity remains abundant, then this remains a largely bullish environment. And that's, of course, despite the fact that even this year, we have seen occasional pops on the upside from volatility against a background where the S&P 500 has been largely rallying in a consistent manner. And on occasion, it pulls back. And it's a bit overbought in the short term, and it has rallied pretty impressively so far this month. So it is not beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some form of consolidation. But as long as that consolidation is limited to a pullback of between 50 and 80 points, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And when we look at the Eurozone, then it is also still on a recovery trajectory. And it is the index has bounced pretty impressively from the region of the trend mean, and it is now testing the peaks seen earlier this year and back in 2015, and it continues to pause around or below this 400 level. But really, a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to really question that this index isn't going to break higher, and that the potential for catch-up in Europe as asset prices continue to be inflated by the ECB's largesse is, I think, remains the base case. And against a background where the stock market remains relatively benign and the prospect for the Fed to continue raising interest rates, then gold has pulled back the last 2 days. It has paused around this $1,300 area, and it really does need to hold the low that we saw at the end, or the end of the week before last, before we could really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Certainly, this represents the region of the trend mean, but it needs to continue to demonstrate that it can find support in this area if the potential for higher to lateral ranging is to be given the benefit of the doubt. And there's not any day that we can avoid looking at the oil price because it is right at the upper side of its range. It was a little bit firmer in here today. This has been a pretty bullish consolidation below $60, and there is the potential for some additional upside in here at present, and not least because there is the potential for Iraqi supply to be interrupted by the Iraqi government taking Kirkuk from the the Kurds. So there is potential for an uptick in geopolitical tensions that could contribute to somewhat higher prices in the short term. Of course, what that is going to result in is an additional spate of drilling in the Permian Basin in the USA. And obviously, the cost differentials then between a gasoline car and an electric vehicle will be impacted as gasoline prices rise. So then there is, we know what the potential headwinds are for oil prices in the medium term, but that doesn't mean that that prices can't go up in the short term. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.